Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The Rapid City Journal has announced that beginning in March, the print issue of the journal will go from a 7-day-a-week distribution to 5 days a week. Again, that begins in March, and that transition is part of a story that we're seeing across the nation as a print subscription and circulation declines. Kevin Wooster is joining us from our SDPB Black Hills studio right now. His blog is called On the Other Hand. You can find it at sdpb.org, and he's joining us to talk about the newspaper business. Hey, Kevin, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Hey, Laura, it's good to be here. Can we just take 3 seconds of silence for 7-day-a-week? Daily newspapers?
We can.
Okay, make it a second. It's sad.
It is. There's a real sense of grief
about
this. You're not being flippant there because it's a big change.
No.
And it's important to point out that the newspaper itself is still 7 days a week, but not the print edition. So 7 days a week, you'll get new content on their website, but not on your doorstep.
No, and for some of us, those of us with gray hair especially, that's a hard thing to adjust to. You know, we really like to. And I write about this a little in this blog, that the importance to me of being able to start my day walking out and seeing that little package of news of current events sitting there on the sidewalk or on the step, or if you have a delivery box, that matters. It matters a lot to me.
Yeah. What is causing the transition? What have the folks at the Rapid City Journal said? How is this part of a longer, more ongoing conversation about layoffs and staff reduction and who owns the paper and then circulation?
Yeah, I mean,
it's a big question, but yeah.
Ad sales are down, continue to be down, even though they argue, I think the managers there argue that they are making gains in that and seeing support from the community, which is great. I hope that's true. Subscriptions, though, and, you know, my sister-in-law Penny down in Sioux Falls, my brother Jim was telling me that Penny remarked the other day when they were in a major airport, that nobody's reading papers. And she thought about, because she looks for him, he looks for him. They have gray hair, too. And she thought about the way they used to be, where you could find 4, 5, or 6 different papers that somebody had started reading and set aside, and you had all these opportunities, and people were sitting around with papers in their hands, and she couldn't find any, really. And, you know, people aren't reading them much. And they're the journal. I often wondered when I would see this thin little Monday edition of the Rapid City Journal, which would sometimes be 4 pages in one section, 4 pages in another section. And sometimes, at least once, it blew away. There was enough wind that the paper in a bag, in a plastic bag, just took off down the street and it was gone. And I thought, how can they afford to pay people to put that together, to print that, to run the mail room, to run the distribution center, and to get out into the hands of the circulation people and the delivery people? Well, apparently they can't. And they're decided that they just can't take that financial hit anymore 2 days a week.
Right. Talk a little bit about how this fits into a nationwide story, because we really are seeing more and more people get their news from other sources than a print newspaper.
Yeah, out of your hand, out of your laptop, out of your your desk computer. And if you look at it, in fact, I was talking to Dave Bordewick this morning about this, the South Dakota Newspaper Association and South Dakota Newswatch guy. Combined roles shows you kind of what's going on. And he told me about a little experiment in Little Rock, and maybe you've heard about it, where they're talking about going to 1 day a week, Sunday, and the rest of the day is online only. And part of what they're doing is they're distributing iPads to any reader that wants an iPad. They're paying for it, giving them away to people to use, and going to teach them to use them and help them how to use them. To try and get them online reading the digital product, the online product.
How can that be more cost effective?
Well, I assume that's the one-time cost of these iPads versus 6 days a week.
Sure.
With all that. You know, when you think about the distribution system of a newspaper, it's brutally inefficient and, you know, sometimes cost prohibitive to get these papers out in the middle of the night, find somebody that's going to deliver them, you know, responsibly and reliably, and through all kinds of weather, through all kinds of challenges and mechanical failures in cars and machinery at the press plant and all that kind of stuff. And then 2 days on the weekend, you're doing that. And then trying to get staffing there for the weekend to put news in the paper.
Yeah.
It was a wonderful process. Apparently, it's just not in many instances affordable anymore.
So I want to talk about two things here, and one is the sort of sense of grief and loss for people who, you know, have a deep connection to the newspaper and all that it means. And then the other thing I want to talk about in a few minutes is this sense that as soon as you say that the newspaper is going to 5 days, people start talking about the future of journalism as a whole and what that represents for how we get our news, what kind of news we're interested in. It's a political conversation. There's all kinds of things happening. But first, let's go back to this sort of tangible object, because in the piece that you write for On the Other Hand, and folks can find that again at sdpb.org/Wooster, it's beautiful sort of tribute to this experience that so many of us have had from looking for, you know, your morning routine, starting your day, picking up the newspaper, getting your cup of coffee, turning the pages, and the solace that that can bring people in its consistency.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that, what that's meant to you personally over the years.
Yeah, I mean, it started with an afternoon paper for me, the Mitchell Daily Republic, which came to our door later in the afternoon, and I waited every day to watch the box scores so I could see how Henry Aaron did for the Milwaukee Braves, because couldn't see it on TV, couldn't listen to it anywhere else. And then, of course, then we would get the Sunday Argus, and we would get the Sunday Journal, and then it evolved with more and more papers going daily, morning papers. And then it became this morning ritual, and whether I was going to school at SDSU, working in Pierre, working in Sioux Falls, working out here, it's the thing that gets my day started. Some people have coffee, I have a newspaper, and it connects you. And as I say in here, there were times in my life when I felt on certain days like I didn't have anything and anybody, and I had my newspaper. And it brought so much to me in the way of humanity, and you know, history and the world around me, close by and far away, that it elevated the spirit and engaged the mind in ways that I haven't found many things do.
My grandmother got two newspapers. She lived in Fairmont, Minnesota, and she got the Daily Fairmont Sentinel, and then she got the Minneapolis Star Tribune.
Yeah.
And you know, when the family gathered there, that was the first thing that you did. Somebody went out and got the paper, and then we made, you know, cantaloupe and grapefruit and what, you know, toast or whatever our breakfast was, and the entire family gathered, you know, during those times around the newspaper.
Yeah.
And passed the you know, you divided up into its sections, and you would, yeah, pass those sections from person to person. And just this weekend I was in Mitchell, and they had the Mitchell Daily Republic, and they would talk about a story that was relevant to their neighborhood, and then they would say, well, you read it, and they would pass the physical paper, similar to how I'm sure most people, you know, I'll send you the link to the story. They just pass that physical piece of paper around,
yeah,
and around. So that one piece, that one newspaper was often read by dozens of people and you know, hung around a house or a dentist office or whatever for quite some time.
Yeah, yeah. Airport terminal, I mean, a bunch of them.
Yeah.
And the language that we use. Did you see in the paper this morning? Hey,
right,
did you read in the paper this morning? Or today, did you see in the paper today? I read in the paper. And so now what is a newspaper? What is a newspaper if we don't deliver it to you, if it's only online? That's another discussion we're having. What do you call it if it's a newspaper that's online only or most of the time or part of the time?
Right. I think it was Randall Beck who used to say, you know, people would criticize it or, you know, the newspaper itself, or say that it didn't matter or it was irrelevant or whatever until they didn't get their paper.
Yeah.
If, you know, if it wasn't delivered appropriately. And then when they called, they always said the same thing. I didn't get my newspaper.
Yeah.
It was never the newspaper,
yep,
anymore. It was like, yep, my newspaper. I didn't get my, there was a sense of community ownership.
Yes. Community,
so what is
and
a
investment.
Newspaper is community.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
What happens when that goes away? It's not the same thing as not having the milk delivered to your door, which, you know, some people will, you know, point that out, that it's,
yeah,
you know, there's lots of things that aren't delivered to your door anymore that we wouldn't consider having that be the process. But it's not the same thing as milk.
It is not the same. It's certainly nourishing in many ways, and it's certainly important to your day. And it's, you know, I can get milk where I get milk, and it's easy to pick it up. The concern we all have about this is what this means about fact-based news, real news, professionally produced news, which is in the newspaper industry, that there's a long and I think honorable history of producing that. And it's not produced everywhere, and it's not produced by everyone. We certainly produce it here. you know, the TV stations are doing their work today to produce it, the radio stations. Newspapers are, I think, I've always believed, at the core of this wonderful conglomerate of real fact-based news production. And the concern that you have is if it gets lost on the internet, if it gets lost in this digital ether, or gets confused, as somebody said to me, I don't know now how to tell what's real and what isn't anymore. And I always tell them, go to a real website, go to public broadcasting, go to the Journal, go to the Argus, go to the New York Times. And even if you think some of those are slanted in one way, like the Times, which gets a lot of criticism, their effort is based on fact. It may not be perfect. It gets one way or the other, but it's based on fact. And so much of what you see in the world today, as we know, more than ever before, is not.
Yeah.
And that's my concern.
Yeah. And back to this idea of what it means for a community to have a newspaper. Think about being in the newspaper. You know, you and I have had bylines in the newspaper, but for some people, getting in the newspaper for the marching band or for, you know, an award that a student has won, for example. I remember every time my daughter got mentioned in the newspaper, if there was a story about her school or a picture, I would get 5 copies of it in the mail that somebody from church had torn it out, laminated it, mailed it to my house, saying, just in case you didn't get a copy of the paper that day.
Yeah.
People would drive down to the Argus office and try to get, you know, 5 or 10.
Yeah.
You know, how many copies of the paper would you bring home? There was a whole, you know, grandmothers have now lost a big part of their day if they can't cut those articles out and save them. We all saved our clippings.
Yeah. Your milk goes in the refrigerator. Your newspaper clippings go on the refrigerator.
Right.
And I've spoke to somebody that said he kept a newspaper clipping that I wrote. I think it was of the 1992 Herald basketball team that upset everybody and won the Big B. And came back to Herald that day, and I wrote a story about it. And it ended with some kids out in the basketball lot at sundown shooting baskets. And he said, that's on my refrigerator, and it's been there for years. And every morning when I look at it, I get a tear in my eye.
Wow.
But I'm happy to look at it.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of enduring. Now, when you make errors, it's not like on,
it's not like around
on the internet where you can go and then you can, you know, fix this. That's going to be on the refrigerator, too. And that's what I always think. I messed up, and that's going to be on the refrigerator for years to come.
Right.
So, you know, and then there's a level of accountability there, too. You know, the permanency of that, I think, makes you really work hard to be fact-based and fair and accurate.
I've been at events as a radio broadcaster where somebody, when they were introducing me, pulled out a clipping of one of my columns from the Argus Leader from years ago, something I've really forgotten that I had written, and said, I want to read this first because I want you to understand a little bit about this person who's about to speak. And it's always astonishing to me that somebody clipped that out and kept it forever. How long did you work for newspapers? How long have you been in print? Still
I did my first story in the summer of 1973 for the Chamberlain Register. And I left the Rapid City Journal in August of 2013. And then, of course, I've been doing some TV and been doing some of this and some. And there were a few years in between. I ran a small outdoor tabloid newspaper into the ground, actually. But I wasn't a businessman. And a couple of years off to work for tourism, 2 years to do some promotional stuff, the outdoors. But otherwise, I've been in or around newspapers and writing for them since the early 70s.
What happens, you know, when we talk about the business model of newspapers, which I'm really interested in just the sense of, you know, what happened to the business model and how is that shifting as things shift to digital content? And somebody on Twitter mentioned, you know, local businesses have been hurt by this too because they lost the place where they could fairly easily and with a good amount of reassurance, you know, place an ad on a certain day. And now they're sort of in the wind sometimes trying to figure out how to do some kind of social media marketing. Do you think there's been an impact on local businesses when the newspaper ad sort of the bottom dropped out of the advertising model?
Well, that's a great point. You know, you think about when the classified ads or the online version hit the internet, and I thought, that's goofy, but it wasn't goofy. It was dangerous for the news business and other types of advertising on the internet. But it's kind of a scattershot approach. And the newspapers, again, that are this community being this part of us, part of our community, we're so good at delivering that ad message, have always been so good at that, and people know because people come in and say, hey, here's your ad, or they bring the ad in, or they talk about seeing the ad, and there's such a clear connection between an advertising dollar spent and something that comes back in return. And I don't know how you figure that out online, but there has to be a loss there. It's a great point.
Let's talk a little bit about what happened and how much people are talking about the future of journalism just because of this announcement from the Rapid City Journal. People talking about not caring about the truth. Where do I find journalism at all? Which is, again, another example of how this one newspaper in the state of South Dakota stands. But its daily distribution stood for so much more. It stands for something bigger, and that's the First Amendment. That's journalism. Yeah. Speak to that, if you would, please.
Yeah, and this has been going on for a long time. Is the Journal and the Argus were, for the last few years, the only dailies that were 7 days a week in the state. And there's still 5 and 6 day a week dailies, quote unquote. And now there's one left at 7 days a week. And can the Argus stay 7 days a week for long? I can't imagine they can. Where do you go from there? I kind of like the idea of the weekend edition. I'm puzzling by why it works on Saturday and not Sunday.
Sure,
because
yeah.
Saturday is a busy day for me and for a lot of people, and there's a lot going on, and I really love Sunday. I know a lot of people that get the New York Times just on Sunday. And we've always sold, when I was at the Argus for many years, there were many more Sunday newspapers sold than regular daily newspapers. And that was true of the Journal, although it wasn't not as pronounced, the difference. And I don't understand that. I do kind of like the weekend edition. I understand why we're not doing Monday. The question is, how does that fit in? Does the Wednesday paper that's always been the grocery stores and the food stories that my wife Mary used to write for the Journal for many years, does that stay as it is? Or does this shift somehow undermine that balance that we had for so long? And how will the people that get paid to do that figure out where this new buying focus is going to be in terms of advertising and the business model? And the real question with this is, will the reduction in the days, these 2 days by the Journal, result in more reporting staff? Because my friend and former colleague Steve Miller and I were talking, we were at the Journal together for many years, this morning about if it means more reporters, if it means another photographer, if it means a copy editor, I'm willing to do this and more, or to accept and support this and more. And I guess that's what the Journal managers are saying they hope it will do.
Really?
I hope it does.
They think it's going to increase their staff?
I hope so, because the staff has been decreased to a point that is just stunning. I don't know how they put a paper out and still, on some days, have quite a bit of locally produced news in it. Well, part of it, what we do, and we've talked about this before, they have, last I counted, 2 full-time reporters at the Journal in the newsroom. Mm-hmm. They have other people, Kent Bush, the editor, other people that do reporting, and they've got a couple of part-time reporters. But full-time reporters, 2. Now, they hope to replace our friend Seth, who's great and is irreplaceable in terms of what he did, but hopefully an enterprise reporter with similar skills eventually. And that's great. That's an ad. They'll add that. But as I pointed out here, I think before, in the late 80s and early 90s, we had 12 to 13 full-time news reporters in the Journal newsroom and 2.5 positions for feature reporters.
Yeah.
I don't know how they put out a paper. I know they're working awfully hard.
I don't think they know how they put out a paper. It's incredibly hard on those journalists. Yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah,
and I got into that a little near the end when I was there because we were losing staff and having more demands all the time. But it was nothing like what they face on a daily basis.
Yeah, one of the other things that I'm interested in as this story sort of unfolds is this notion of, with more and more people getting their news from digital sources, 2 things, and one is just the sort of disruptive, quality of staring at a screen in the first place. At what point, we're noticing addiction problems and anxiety and depression problems. It's a whole lot different than, spreading out the sections of the newspaper across your pillows on a Sunday morning as you recline in bed. versus, you know, scrolling through your phone and looking at the next thing and being distracted to the next thing. So what does it do for the quality and the depth of news and the way we experience it? I think there's a lot to think about there as well.
I had an older TV reporter say to me once, listen, I don't make any bones about it. I get up in the morning, I have my coffee, I smoke a cigarette, I read the journal, I decide what I'm going to cover. That would drive TV people crazy,
right.
But there's some truth in it. And
right.
depending on the market, different truths, different degrees of truth.
And
I believed and have believed for a long time that there are different ways to present the news and different roles that these different news outlets in parts of the big conglomerate of news play. And I continue to believe that the foundation of fact-based journalism is newspapers. That's when I was 3 years at Kello, I still read the journal every day in the Argus Online to see what was going on. And sometimes I used some of that for my own reporting.
Yeah.
It's a great place to start. You know, we listen to the radio and that's a great place. And we watch the news and that's great. But there's this print product that sits in front of you every day and may not be as compelling sometimes, may be deeper and more detailed sometimes, which I know is what we're trying to do at Public Broadcasting. Get more depth, not what they're doing on TV most of the time.
Yeah.
And so my concern is how do you replace that and who does it? I mean, you can still do it online. You can still have a news, quote unquote, paper online and do the work, but you have to have professional journalists to do it.
And do you remember how easy it was to distinguish between a professional newspaper and kind of a, you know, a political pamphlet kind of newspaper?
Sure.
Like just by holding it in your hand,
you
could tell that there was a huge difference. And that gets to the other point that I kind of wanted to talk about a little bit with you, which is there's a recent report in The Atlantic, which is a magazine, about the misinformation campaign of 2020 in the election, and these micro-targeted digital ads, the efforts for misinformation, the efforts to sort of reduce the credibility of reliable news sources. And they mentioned this term censorship by noise, where if you have someone like NPR's Mary Louise Kelly doing a story with, you know, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, not only do they just try to discredit her and say things about her, but then they flood, and by they I'm being very broad there, but the market can just be flooded with these other news stories that will distract you from, well, which is a newspaper, it's all there. You pick up the newspaper, it has an authority to it that once you go into the digital scope, just doesn't, you know, when you're listening to Public Broadcasting, you know as soon as your dial hits that station because you can tell the difference between that and the commercial radio stations and the AM talk people. Same thing with a newspaper. When you pick up that newspaper, you just know you're on a place that you're with an organization that you can trust.
Yeah, when you go from Public Broadcasting to AM, often the screaming stops, which is kind of nice. You know, I get tired of being yelled at on AM radio. And when you hold a newspaper in your hand, you can get confused. My brother Jim and I were talking about this because he said even I get confused. I get on there and he's less online oriented than I am. What is what and what do you know and what do you believe?
Right.
But you can step away from all that in your living room, in your kitchen, in, you know, and hold that product in your hand in a believable way. It's completely separate from this mess online that you have to sort through. There's no sorting. Here it is, in my hands, the facts. You can never recapture that, no matter how good you get as a newspaper presenting fact-based news online, because it's still going to get confused a little bit,
right,
or a lot. But you can't confuse the reality of what you're holding in your hand.
I think that's a great place to leave it. And then, of course, with the great irony of saying you can read Kevin Wooster's content online at sdpb.org/Wooster. And again, a plea for going to those sites, rapidcityjournal.com, argusleader.com, sdpb.org, those places where you know that you're getting those facts in the digital landscape. Kevin, thank you very much. We appreciate your time.
Good to be here.